Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Pesach is coming. I decided what we should do the next couple of weeks is kind of focus on some of the halachos of the Pesach Seder, not the Vertlach, the little Torah thoughts that we share at the Seder, or we wish we would share, we wish people wouldn't share at the Seder, as it may be. That's something that I don't want to go into right now, but let's just talk about the halachos of the Pesach Seder. This year, actually, Pesach is somewhat unusual, which is that the first night of Pesach is Friday night, meaning the second night is Mosei Shabbos, meaning that there are certain halachos that are different because Pesach is on a Shabbos. Just very briefly, to go through some of these dinim, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you're supposed to dip the karpas in salt water or in vinegar, no? That's like, I think there's a song that they taught us about this, you know, dip the apple, whatever. There's like a song that they taught us about dipping the karpas into the salt water. The thing is that when Pesach falls out on a Friday night, you are not supposed to make the salt water on the Friday night itself. You should make the salt water before Yontiv, before Shabbos, before Yontiv. The reason is that if you make a lot of salt water, and the salt water is very strong, it appears like you are doing something that is involved in the tanning process. And because it's something that's involved in the tanning process, so therefore it's usher to make it on Shabbos and Yontiv. It's usher to make it on Shabbos. You are allowed to make it on Yontiv, not on Shabbos. Therefore, when Pesach is on Friday night, you should not use, you should not make your own salt water then. You should make the salt water before Shabbos. So the charoses, you're technically, the issue with making the charoses, whether there's going to be some concern of kneading when you make the charoses, it depends how you make charoses, what recipe you use for making charoses. If you use, my father always used to make charoses with apple sauce. It's much easier to mix together. If you do it that way, then there's zero issue of kneading. If you have some solid chunks, so then it might be more of an issue. If that's the case, then you should make it before also, that you should make it before the Shabbos or before the Yontiv as well. Fine. Let's go on. So that's the issue in terms of making salt water. If you didn't make salt water before Shabbos, so then if you have vinegar, you can use vinegar for the dipping. If you don't have vinegar, you don't have salt water, actually the Mishnah Berurah writes in one place that you can dip the karpas into wine. I've never done this. I actually wanted to do this. And like we do a lot of things like Pesach night in order the kids should ask questions. So I was thinking of maybe doing that this year. Just don't tell my kids that instead of having, you know, salt water, we'll just have some wine and we'll dip the karpas in wine. Another issue that comes up when Pesach is on Matzah Shabbos in this case is that there is a slight change that some make in the text. In the bracha of, we'll talk about Yach Nahas in a few minutes, in the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu, in the bracha that we say at the end of Magid, so the way we usually have the text is, V'nochal sham min ha-zvachim u'min ha-pzachim, that when we eat the zvachim, zvachim probably refers to the carbon of the Chagiga, and then the carbon Pesach, min ha-zvachim u'min ha-pzachim. The problem is that when Pesach is on a Matzah Shabbos, which for us is the second Seder this year, so you should not say, according to some, according to the Bach, you should not say min hazvachim or min hapsachim, because they would not bring the Chagiga on the 14th on Shabbos. They would not bring the Chagiga on the first day of Pesach, when the first day of Pesach is on Shabbos. So therefore, the Bach says that we should change the text. Instead of min hazvachim min hapsachim, the Bach says that we should change the text to be min hapsachim or min hazvachim, because we're not eating the carbon chagiga before the Pesach this year. Instead, we're going to eat the carbon Pesach this year, and next year we'll have a carbon chagiga. So it's min hapsachim or min hazvachim. That's what the Bach says. Many assume that we don't change the text ever, and we always do min hazvachim u'min hapsachim. And even on the year when Pesach is on the Matzei Shabbos, we still do min hazvachim u'min hapsachim, because we're not talking about this year, we're talking about next year. And next year we will eat min hazvachim u'min hapsachim. Next year we'll have a carbon chagiga, even if this current year of Pesach, we don't have it. That's the basic literature. There is a bit of a problem here, which is that the Mishnah has the text of that bracha. The Mishnah on Kuf Tazayin and Pesachim has the text, and the Mishnah writes that the text is min ha
Psachim Umin Hasvachim, which is the way that it's assumed we don't do it. So, what does that mean? Don't we eat the Chagiga before the Pesach? So, this actually is the clue for the Rambam. The Rambam has a different approach to Judaism in general. But I think anyone who's ever come to my Gemara Shiurim realizes that the way I say things is that Judaism is this great religion and the Rambam was born, and the Rambam kind of messed everything up. So, normally, we assume, how many times did they eat the Korban Pesach at the Pesach Seder? You know, the Last Supper, the Pesach Seder. How many times did they eat the Korban Pesach?
But I thought they did the Korban Pesach...
So usually it's eaten at the end, right? It's the Afikomen, is that you eat Pesach, right? So the Rambam writes, for some weird reason, the Rambam says that they eat Korban Pesach twice. They begin the meal by eating Pesach, then they would eat some Chagiga, then they would eat more Pesach at the end of the meal. So they're eating Pesach twice, according to the Rambam.
What about the sandwich?
So the Korech sandwich, again, the way Hillel assumes, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, they'd kind of put it all together. Pesach Matzah Mar, and they'd eat it all together. Okay, great. No, they didn't have a separate Korech. That would be what they ate.
Right. Right.
What they ate was the Korech, was the Hillel sandwich. But the Rambam writes that they'd eat Pesach twice. This Rambam actually answers a difficulty. The last Mishnah Pesachim says that if you make a bracha on the Pesach, you don't have to make a bracha on the Karban Chagiga. There was a bracha that they made. We make a bracha like we eat food. Borei pri ha eis borei pri adoma. They made a bracha al achilas Pesachim. Al achilas zvachim. They made such a bracha. Mirtz Hashem, maybe we can make it still this year. And the bracha al achilas Pesachim. So they would make a bracha. So the problem is, the Mishnah says, if I make a bracha on the Korban Pesach, I don't have to make a bracha on the Korban Chagiga. But that doesn't make any sense, because if you eat the Chagiga before the Pesach... So, what do you mean you made a bracha on the Pesach, you don't have to make a bracha on the Chagiga? Pesach is after Chagiga. The answer is, says the Rambam, they ate Pesach twice. They ate Pesach at the beginning of the meal, and then make a bracha on the Pesach. And then, if you make a bracha on the Pesach, you don't have to make a bracha on the Chagiga. And then at the end of the meal, they need Pesach again as Afikomen. So it could be that when the Mishnah has the text, V'nochal shem min ha-psachim min ha-zvachim, that we eat Pesach and then Chagiga, that's because the Mishnah is a Maimonidean. Hello. How are you, Gila?
Good, how are you?
Baruch Hashem.
There's just something that sounds so not the way the Korban Pesach would work at the beginning. There's just something, everything about the essence of the Seder would be there is no Pesach at the beginning.
Right.
Nothing other than to say that it just feels wrong.
It feels wrong, exactly. So Judaism is this great religion, then the Rambam was born.
Yeah, but why would he do that? Like, what's his...
I don't know. I mean, because the Rambam is reading a Mishnah. And the Mishnah says Pesach before Chagiga. And isn't Pesach after Chagigah? Pesach has to be eaten when you're full. Well, the Rambam would tell me, that you ate it twice. By the way, it could be that the reason why we eat matzah twice in some ways is a fulfillment of that. No? Right? Everything that we do, this Rambam is a collector's item. It's a classic, but doesn't mean it's not interesting. Okay.
During time of the Beit HaMikdash, didn't they do the Korban Pesach during the afternoon?
They would sacrifice the Pesach in the afternoon, but they'd eat it at night.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
We're talking about eating the Korban Pesach.
Okay, okay.
I got it. So now, this idea, by the way, that the last Mishnah of Pesachim says, if I make a bracha on the Korban Pesach, I don't have to make a bracha on the Korban Chagiga, is an interesting category because that seems to be a rule of Ikar and Tafel by brachos. Ikar and Tafel is a rule that if I eat Cheerios in the morning, by the way, Cheerios used to be a healthy cereal. Now it's like Honey Nut Cheerios has like more sugar than Fruity Pebbles, by the way. But, just saying. Hence, I would never eat Honey Nut Cheerios. I'd only eat Fruity Pebbles. This is just the world according to me. But if you eat Cheerios with milk, so Ikar and Tafel tells me you only make a bracha on the Cheerios, you don't make a bracha on the milk. You make a bracha on the main thing, not on the secondary thing. That's Ikar and Tafel. Now that rule makes sense usually by brachos on food. However, the last Mishnah of Pesachim is telling me an interesting rule that there's Ikar and Tafel even by Birchas HaMitzvos. I make a bracha on the Pesach, I don't have to make a bracha on the Chagiga. That's Ikar and Tov about Birchas HaMitzvos. I know of one other case of this in Judaism, which is that the Rabbeinu Tam says that when you sleep in the sukkah, you don't make a bracha on sleeping in the sukkah, because he made a bracha on eating, and everybody knows that sleeping is secondary to eating.
What?
Honestly, my entire perspective on life is exactly the opposite. Nothing is secondary to sleeping, in my understanding, but okay.
The
bracha leishev basukkah, how come you don't make a bracha? You have to sleep in the sukkah. How come you don't make a bracha when you go to sleep? The Rabbeinu Tam says, because ikar and tafel, the ikar is eating, and the sleeping is tafel to the eating. So if I make a bracha when I eat, not when I sleep in the sukkah.
But the bracha, the word of the bracha is leishev, which is more sleeping than...
Leishev means to live, to dwell. It doesn't mean, right, to sit. It doesn't... Leishev means to dwell. Yes?
It includes eating and sleeping.
Huh?
Leishev would include eating and sleeping.
We include eating, right? We make a bracha leishev when we eat in the sukkah. We don't make a bracha leishev when we sleep in the sukkah. Because sleeping is considered a secondary function to eating. Gila, you had another comment?
Yeah, I had a question about like how you can like rank korbanot. Because like it sounds like almost that you're now saying like the Korban Pesach, which I understand if it would be more important than Chagiga, like this is like the Korban Pesach.
So the Korban Pesach is, listen, the entire holiday is named after that little thing, at least in biblical times. Like the Pesach is the main thing. The Chagiga is kind of the warm-up act. You have to eat Chagiga so that when you eat Pesach, you're already full. Right, the Chagiga is like the chicken soup that you eat during Shulchan Aruch, so that you're really full when you eat Afikomen. Okay. Right, it's the warm-up act. Oh, okay. The next issue that comes up again, we're just going very quickly, is you're supposed to this year, because the second night of Pesach is Matzei Shabbos. So when you make Kiddush, you do Kiddush / Havdalah together. In the process, that's called Yak Nahaz. In the old Haggadahs, used to have a picture of like trapping rabbits as Yak Nahaz, because in German or something, Nahaz means like some sort of rabbit. What?
A hare.
A rabbit. Right, not a hare, right, a rabbit. And so in German, and somehow it made it to all the old Haggadahs, it's like a picture of like, who was it, the cartoon character always used to like shoot rabbits?
Elmer Fudd.
Okay, so you have like that type of image in all of the old Haggadahs. That's called Yak Nahaz. Yak Nahaz is that you make the bracha of Yayin, Kiddush, Ner, Havdolah, Zman, right? Basically, first you make the Bar Priya Gof, and then the Kiddush, then you do the Bar Merah Eish, and the Havdolah, and then you do the Shechiyanu at the end. So we're doing Kiddush and Havdolah together. Now, the weird thing about doing Kiddush and Havdolah together is... First of all, most people, many people, I should say, sit when they recite Havdalah, and they stand when they recite Kiddush. In this case, we stand even for the Havdalah part. There's a practice that many women won't make the bracha of Havdalah themselves. They'll have a man be mostly them with Havdalah, because there's a sheet of the Magid Mishnah that women are technically only obligated in Shabbos activities, but Matzei Shabbos activity is a regular mitzvah saseisha zman grama, and women are not fully obligated in it. So therefore, many women will have a man be mostly them with Havdalah. I remember as a kid, my father used to travel a lot. And like my mother made Kiddush for us on like Shabbos and everything, and like Motzei Shabbos for Havdalah, we'd always go to a neighbor, and I felt it was like the weirdest thing. I didn't understand why. Then as I got older, right, I saw this Magid Mishnah. It says in Shulchan Aruch we should try to follow this Magid Mishnah L'chatchila.
But if women aren't obligated, then why do they have to get somebody else?
So it's a question whether they're obligated, and therefore it's better for them. All right, we try to get all the bases now. So. Leo Haseder, you make Yak Nahaz, it's Kiddush and Havdalah together. There's a practice also, it's a complete folk tale, but there's a practice that your women are not supposed to drink from the Havdalah cup. It helps you grow a mustache, you grow a beard. I'm sure you heard this, no? And if you eat cereal without milk, like you'll grow a tree in your stomach.
Wait, what?
And these are all things that my grandmother told me. How could they not
be
true?
I didn't eat cereal without milk because I just didn't like milk.
Don't worry, you're fine.
We had to tell you're fine. It's okay. Caroline, we're good. We're still good. But So there is like a humorous discussion that maybe women shouldn't drink the first cup on Motzei Shabbos this year, because it's also Havdalah, and women shouldn't drink the Havdalah cup. And like, this is a bad joke. It's a bad joke. We assume that it's Kiddush and Havdalah, but women are allowed to drink the Havdalah wine, and in this case it's fundamentally Kiddush. You could drink it according to everybody. It's really not a problem. There is a bit of a discussion. Let's say on Motzei Shabbos this year, you forgot to do the Havdalah part of the Kiddush. So you only do a regular Kiddush, and then you remember, oh my gosh, you know, like, I didn't do a Havdalah. So what do I do? There's a problem. It says in Shulchan Aruch that you only have four cups, and between cups one and two, you're not supposed to drink wine. So let's say you're about to eat karpas, and you remember that you didn't make Havdalah. So what do? You can't make Havdalah then on the cup of wine, because that would be an extra cup, because you've just had your Kiddush. So
well,
the Shulchan Aruch
have a cup of not wine.
So even, oh, that's an interesting idea, to have a cup of not wine, because you can make Havdalah, well, don't use beer. It's at the Pesach Seder, don't use beer. Okay, this is rabbinic wisdom. So in terms of not wine, also, if you're going to make a bracha in any cup, it will still be nira kimosif al hakosos. Remember, technically speaking, you could be yotzei dalek kosos with other drinks besides wine, according to many opinions. I remember my grandmother in the later years, I told her she should drink dalek kosos with unsweetened tea. Because when you're a diabetic.
If you're supposed to be abstaining from alcohol because you're on certain medications?
Grape juice works.
But I don't know, Marav, like after Shabbos going into Pesach, but don't you technically say like a Havdalah in Marav?
So you technically say Havdalah, but still, even though you say Havdalah in Shmona Esrei, still we have another obligation to make Havdalah on the cup. And you're really not allowed to eat anything before you make Havdalah on the cup. So let's say I'm sitting at the Pesach Seder, and I remember after my normal Kiddush, I remember I didn't make Havdalah, and I'm about to eat Karpas. So the Alter Rebbe, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, has this razzle-dazzle idea, which is that in this case, we allow you to eat before you make Havdalah, and you'll make Havdalah together with the second cup of wine after Magid. And the reason for that, he says, is because it's going to be Mosif HaLakosos, you can't make an extra cup of Havdalah before you have the Karpas. You're not supposed to eat anything before Havdalah. Well, the reason I'm not supposed to eat anything before Havdalah is because I have an obligation to make Havdalah on the cup. In this case, I don't really have an obligation to make Havdalah on the cup because I can't make Havdalah on the cup. So therefore, just eat your Karpas without what's it called. Now, it's also entirely possible. Okay, so we'll leave it like that. That's what the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says. This is a difficult issue. What to do in that case is really very difficult. Try not to allow that to happen. Try to do your Yaknahaz second night so that that does not happen, because if that happens, so then it gets a little complicated. Okay, let's go on. So the second night, you light Lahadlik Ner Shel Yom Tov. Right, the first night Shul Shabbos and Yom Tov. The second night's only Shul Yom Tov. Yeah. So technically speaking, when you make the Bar Mehar Eish, you make it on the candles that you lit. They do sell this thing for like $25 in Eichler. It's called the Yaknahaz candle, which is like a regular Shabbos candle, but has two wicks, so that can also be used for a Havdalah candle, because a Havdalah candle is supposed to have two wicks. If you buy that, it's a nice thing, but you just wasted your $25. Because we pass in the Iker Hadin that there is no need for a torch by Havdalah. It's a Hiddur mitzvah. It's a special, you can make your Bar Mehar Eish just on a single flame. You don't need the braided candle. It's a hiddur mitzvah. So I would not spend $25. Or I don't think it costs $25, but I think the Yaknahaz candles are just not worth the money. That's my opinion.
So you don't have to hold two birthday candles together.
So on Yom Tov, you should not hold two candles together.
No, not Yom Tov.
On a regular night, when you make Havdalah again, if you could hold it together easily, you may as well. But if not, you can make Bar Mehar Eish on a single. The first year I was in the shul, actually, so they forgot to leave a Ner Shel Shavas in the shul kitchen for
Motzei Yom Kippur, Chazal Motzei Yom Kippur. So what do we do in that case? So I told the people in the shul, they thought I was like a reformed rabbi, that we could make Bori Marei Eish on the lights in the shul. There's an incandescent bulb on top of... So I said they can make a Bori Marei Eish on that. So one of the people came over to me and says, what do you mean? It's only a single flame and not braided. How can you make a Bori Marei Eish? I said, no, it's okay. Like, you don't have to worry so much. So that happened the first year I was in the shul, like in ancient history already. Fine, let's go on. So, next halacha... because Pesach this year, first night, is on Shabbos, so there is a general discussion that you're not allowed to read on Shabbos to candlelight. There's a concern the Gemara Shabbos writes that if I'm reading with a candlelight, maybe it's going to begin to flicker and I might move the candle, so I'm not allowed to read to candlelight. If it's something that... is well known to everybody, so there's not such a concern that because it will flicker, you might tilt the light. So you're allowed to read to candlelight in those cases. What about the Haggadah? Is the Haggadah well known to everybody? So the Mishnah Berurah says, absolutely, the Haggadah is well known to everybody, so therefore you're allowed to read the Haggadah to candlelight, because who doesn't know the Haggadah by heart? Oh. I totally don't get this. Who doesn't know the Haggadah by heart? I would guess 96.3% of people. And it's an approximate estimate. That's what I would guess. But okay, that's what the Mishnah Berurah assumes. He references it over here in Sifkatan Beis, right before the word Kadesh in Sifkatan Beis. He says, look in Siman Resh Ayin Hey. That's what he writes over there, that obviously everyone knows the Haggadah by heart. Next issue, Friday night, first night of Pesach. So it's a Friday night. You sing Shalom Aleichem.
Yes.
That's one vote. Anyone want to disagree? Anyone want to get it right?
Well, I wouldn't.
It sounds like a trick question.
Sounds like a trick question. So we don't sing Shalom Aleichem Seder
night.
How
is that even a halachic question?
What?
How is that even a halachic question?
So halacha, do you sing Shalom Aleichem?
I would have said you only say it. Instead of saying the paragraphs once, you say it three times.
In the Acharonim that we don't say Shalom Aleichem Seder night for a very simple reason. The simple reason is that you want to hurry up to begin the meal as quickly as possible. So don't say anything that's not absolutely necessary. It says in Shulchan Aruch, actually for some reason this ended up printed like in a weird way. I didn't notice it beforehand. But if you start reading from the end of line 1 and then you jump to line 2, it says, Yia Shulchan Aruch mi ba'od yom. Right? That you should set the table during the day. So Friday during the day you should set the table so that you could come home and begin the meal right away. I underlined the parts. You see, like, I don't know why the printing ended up all messed up over here, but you want to eat right away when it gets dark, so that's why you don't say Shalom Aleichem, etc., because you want to begin eating right away. It's very important, actually, to try... People sometimes make a mistake when they have a Seder, especially with little kids, that they spend so much time on the Manishtana for the little kids, by the time the kids done with the Manishtana, it's all over. It's not easy, but the idea is to tell the kids at least the story of leaving Mitzrayim, like to just ask a question and then to leave it as a cliffhanger, and the kid's not going to know the answer to the Manishtana until next year or 3 years from now, whenever the kid's old enough. So I don't know if that's such a good idea. In fact, I know that's not a good idea. What you should really do is you should try to keep the Seder moving. Keeping the Seder moving involves, I don't think, especially if you have a Seder with a little kid, I don't think people should say Divrei Torah. Say the Divrei Torah during the meals at lunch. Say Divrei Torah during Shulchan Aruch if you want, but I don't think you should be saying many Divrei Torah.
I also support this.
What you should do is you say the Haggadah. In fact, it says in Shulchan Aruch, I give you the source somewhere, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you should say the Haggadah B'Lashon Laz in the foreign language, and Rebbe Eliyahu of Lundris would say the Haggadah B'Lashon Laz. Lundris is what the Rishonim called London. So the official text in Shulchan Aruch says that you should say the Haggadah in English. Mrs. Maisel's Haggadah, whatever it is, do it in English. It makes sense. It makes sense. Try to keep the Haggadah going. Finishing by Chatzos in some ways, I can make a halacha case why it's not so necessary. The purpose is that you want to do it so the kids are awake. Now, if you have an adult Seder, and that's a very different experience than a children's Seder, so then by all means, talk about whatever you want. I strongly recommend also not using it as a time to, like, say your gematrias and whatever, especially with adults that are all going to be making fun of you. And that's what kept us going. Beautiful, wonderful, grand. Don't say that. Right? Well, instead, what you should do is have sophisticated conversations. Try to talk about what happened. Why is it that there's no reference to who Paro was? How come we have no idea who Paro was? It's a thought-provoking question, no? Who was this Paro? We have no idea. There's like a range of like 400 years. We don't know which guy it was. But we don't know his name. It's a little bit strange, right? There's so much that we don't know. Think about it. Discuss it. Talk about sophisticated ideas. Divrei Torah have a value if they bring out certain concepts that you wouldn't get otherwise, but I really strongly recommend not focusing very much on the Divrei Torah. Rabbi Schwab, Zecharon Lefracha, used to comment that the mitzvah is v'higadol l'avincha, that parents should say the Haggadah. There's no mitzvah v'higadol l'avicha, that children should like tell their... Right, I think that's what Rabbi Schwab used to say. There's no mitzvah v'higadol l'avicha. Like, you're sitting at your parents' table, let your parents... say the ideas. I'm going to be, this coming Shabbos, I'm going to be a scholar in residence, actually in the shul I grew up in, and one of the points I'm going to make is the idea of the experience. Like, parents have a responsibility. If you have children, grandchildren at the Seder, there's a responsibility to tell them what you remember of your parents, to tell them what Pesach was like when you were growing up. I mean, every year at the Seder, like, I remember my father would tell us about how he remembers that in Pesach in 1944, his father couldn't do the Seder. He had gotten some news about family members, whatever, who were killed, and he just sat down, he made Kiddush, and he broke down crying. And he couldn't do it. And that story stayed with me. Like, knowing things is important. Like, and the night of the Seder, we spoke about this actually on Shabbos Haggadah a few years ago. One of the reasons I don't like stealing the Afikomen is because the night of the Seder is supposed to be the main night of Chinuch in Judaism. And if you're going to spend so much energy on stealing, let's be honest, our religion is not into stealing, right? So if you're spending so much energy on the stealing part, I really don't think that is a particularly good idea. We might, again, be able to defend the custom, but I don't think it should be a main emphasis, although for little kids, sometimes you need some way of keeping them awake, and because it's Yontif, they can't be playing on their DS or video games or iPads, whatever kids do today, so it is a challenge. One of the issues that comes up at the Seder, just to try to speed things up, is Kiddush has to be done. Kiddush has to be done, it says in Shulchan Aruch, after dark. You should daven quickly, get home, but don't make Kiddush too soon. It has to be after Tzeis HaKochavim when you make Kiddush. There is a discussion whether it only has to be after Tzeis HaKochavim when you drink that first cup, because all four cups have to be done after nightfall. That's what the Taz, right? So the Magen Avraham assumes that actually you have to say Kiddush after dark. The words of Kiddush, right? So there's a difference between the Magen Avraham and the Taz of like a minute. Or made, depending on how much you sing. Okay, but conceptually, it's a very interesting idea of salvation, just to say that according to the Magen Avraham, that you have to say Kiddush after dark. The idea is that Kiddush itself is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. When I say Kiddush, and I speak about how Kibonu v'charta, etc., Shebachabai mikolam, Ramatam mikol lashon, when I speak about Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, that itself is a fulfillment of telling the story of leaving Mitzrayim, and therefore that also has to be done after dark, according to the Magen Avraham. There is a question.
When you say then you say a Shema at night after dark, because
the one time all year in the Shul, the way I did the Zmanim is I like to give Divrei Torah on Yontiv at night between Mincha and Ma'ariv. So we start Ma'ariv around half an hour after Shkia, which is the early Zman of Tzeis. That's like the Zman of Tzeis according to Rav Shechter, according to the Baal Tanya, etc. The only time during the year when I start Ma'ariv early is Leil HaSeder, it's Pesach night. Again, I also give very brief Divrei Torah. Then I try to start Ma'ariv around 15 minutes after Shkia so that we finish I'm worried that if I'll start right after Mincha, so then people go home and make Kiddush before dark. So I try to do it in a way that I start Maariv around 15 minutes after Shkia in order. So I give a few different Torah. That's actually when I say Veruach. If you want to hear Veruach on the Haggadah, I say it between Mincha and Maariv in Shul at night, because what else are you going to say then?
I'm saying just in general, like every day.
So you should always say Kriya Shema after dark. So make sure that you say Kriya Shema Seder night. It's actually a very important thing. There's a discussion of, because it's Leo Shimurim, maybe you shouldn't say Kriya Shema. In Siman Tov Pei, that comes up. Most poskim assume that you do say Kriya Shema Leo HaSeder. You just don't say the extra psukim that you say with Kriya Shema Shal Hamita, the psukim about how all the angels protect you and stuff like that. But the Shema, the first paragraph of Shema, certainly you do say even Leo HaSeder. I think that's the basic halacha of Leo Shimurim. Okay.
What about saying halal after Marv?
So saying halal after Marv, there are different practices of whether you say halal after Mariv. Rav Soloveitchik was a fan of saying halal in Shul after Mariv. The Yerushalmi writes that there's 18 days and 2 nights when you say halal during the year. The 2 nights refers to the 2 nights of Pesach, if you live in Chutz La'aretz. The minhag of this show used to be, when Rabbi Muskin was the rabbi, he asked the Rav, and the Rav said that they should say halal and shul. So Rabbi Muskin said halal and shul. At some point, Rabbi Schneidman removed the practice of saying halal and shul. I brought it back. So we do say halal in the shul now at night.
Why is that?
I gave a shir about a few years ago. It's a long conversation. Yes, Ben, you had a comment?
The case that you do have
time
to kill, are you
the case when what?
You do have time to kill. Like, is there any problem with saying Shalom Aleichem and stuff like that?
No. In other words, there's no problem with it. There are some poskim who say that you don't say Shalom Aleichem in the sukkah ever, because this is like a little bit too Hasidish. You won't like this, but I'll say it anyway. There's some poskim who say that you never say Shalom Aleichem in the sukkah, because Shalom Aleichem means that you're welcoming the malachim in, and the sukkah is so holy that even angels can't go in there. Right? That's some of the Shem Yishmuel. The Avni Nezer has this in his Sefer on Chumash. The Ushpizin could come. Avram Yisrael and Yaakov are holier than the angels. There's a whole discussion, who's holier, humans or angels, no?
Oh, yeah.
You probably never thought about this one. But So humans have choice, angels don't have choice. On the other hand, humans often, precisely because we have choice, we mess up. Right?
It's tshuva, then you get to do tshuva.
If you do tshuva, then you end up even in a higher place, right? So there's a discussion. Nefesh HaChaim has an essay about whether... Now, one of the questions that comes up just very briefly is, one of the reasons not to make Kiddush until after dark is because there's a halach of Kiddush from Makom Seuda.
Yeah.
And since I can't eat matzah, that's the main meal of the night, until it's dark, so I can't make Kiddush until it's dark. That's the way the Prima Gadam understands it. Not Rav Soloveitchik's razzle-dazzle approach of how the Kiddush itself is a fulfillment of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, that's an interesting idea. That means that you need Kiddush Makom Seuda Seder night. Well, Kiddush Makom Seuda usually has a certain statute of limitations. No? I can't make Kiddush now and then eat my challah 6 hours from now. Well, what happens Seder night? I make Kiddush, and I'm not going to eat my matzah. Don't eat challah Seder night. But I'm not going to eat my matzah until hours and hours and hours. It's like, what's going on? How do you do it? So there is a whole discussion. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach actually has an interesting suggestion, which is maybe this explains yachatz. Yachatz is like the most mysterious part of the Seder. Take the matzah, break it. Okay, so you're supposed to say the Haggadah on the broken matzah. Okay, wonderful. I have many broken matzahs in my box. Trust me. If you buy matzah, you're going to have a lot of broken matzahs. So just take out a broken one. Either you take out a full one and then you break it. Right? It doesn't really make sense. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach suggests that maybe the idea of yachatz is a way of saying that we already began our process of eating bread. And therefore, we're already fulfilling our Kiddush from Makom Seuda that way, because we're breaking our bread, and even though we're going to drezach and drezach for a couple of hours until we get to eating the matzah, that's his suggestion. I like it. I find it interesting. Let me just say over a few other quick things. Kadesh Urchatz, the only simon in the Seder that has a vav, is Urchatz, no? Karpas yachatz. There's no vav. Magid rachza. How come it's urchatz? So right, how come there's a vav there? Why don't we have kaddish rachatz? Right, what's urchatz? So Shlomo Zalman Orbach suggests that maybe the idea is that this is not washing. That's washing as a matter of real halacha. It's kaddish urchatz. It's washing for extra kedusha. Right, all year long, many poskim assume, like the Bali HaTosis, that you don't have to wash your hands when you eat vegetables dipped in a liquid. It says in Shulchan Aruch, you should wash your hands, but we don't make a bracha on it. We don't assume it's really washing me'ikar aden. It's like a chumrah to wash our hands. But Seder night, kadesh urchatz, it's washing for additional kedusha. If you're washing for additional kedusha, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, so that's why the vav is there, to show that it is not regular washing, it's washing for Kedusha. Because it's not regular washing, Rav Shlomo Zalman used to recommend that the women in his home, his wife, his daughters, would not remove their rings before washing at Urchatz, to show people that it's not real washing. It's like just a cutesy type of thing. The minhag in Breuer's, I believe, is that only the Baal HaBayis washes his hands at Urchatz. I strongly recommend that anyone who has like a very large Seder should institute that practice, because there's no reason for a 20-minute break that everybody goes to wash their hands. Let the Baal HaBayis wash his hands. The person's leading the Seder, and like again, the idea is you want to speed it up. So that's what I strongly recommend, especially at large communal storim. Okay, so I wanted to get into Karpas, but maybe next week. My hope is like that we could run through like the Seder, talk about some halachas, tell a few jokes, and then hopefully we'll be ready for Pesach the proper way. Thank you for listening.